Welcome to Wrestling Inside the Ropes with James Stewart.
I'm the best. I'm the best in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day.
And Mike Sarge Riley.
I don't know if you realize it or not, but you're trespassing on private property. When you walk through here, through these ropes, you're in my yard. Bad things happen in my yard.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes.
Hello again, everybody. My name is James Stewart, also known as the Lurch-like ghoul with an undeserved self-importance. And if you don't know that reference, search Twitter and you'll find it. I'm joined this week, as always, by Mike Sarge Riley, who is now a noted remote theft at the Sports Hub. Mike?
Alleged, but innocent until proven guilty. And yes, I was compared to as the Repo Man by someone on Twitter this week. But I said, no, you should really compare me to the Big Boss Man because justice did prevail. There you go.
Well, Mike, I hate to break it to you, but I've come to the conclusion that here on going forward, you're my fall guy.
That was good.
So, when I'm in trouble with the law, I'm FaceTiming you. That's just how it is.
All right. Done deal. I know some people.
I want to thank everybody for the support of the podcast and everybody who listens on HD2. Yes, that's right. This podcast actually does have an on-air outlet called WBZ-FM HD2. And so what you do with that is if you're listening to the Sports Hub 98.5, you just kind of click your thing over and it'll go 98.5-2. And, you know, we are on rotation with some of the archives of the other shows. So we actually are an over-the-air outlet if you're driving around in your car and you have HD2 capability.
How cool is that, huh?
I don't know how popular HD2 is, but we're on it, so we might as well like say that we're actually on radio.
That's what you call ride the hot hand.
Mike, your opening thought relates to Raw on Monday night?
Monday Night Raw this past week, Jimmy, and it was the grudge match of the Intercontinental Championship from last week where Seth Rollins lost to Dolph Ziggler, which was actually a pretty good match. And
fabulous match. Awesome match.
Yep, and Dolph became the new champion. And, yeah, Jimmy, we have not had a show since right after Money in the Bank, so we haven't had a chance to talk about that match right there with Dolph and Seth Rollins. So, yep, that was the night after Money in the Bank where Dolph won, and, you know, here it is a week later, a grudge match. And I think that Monday Night Raw had a real chance to cash in here, no pun intended, for make it a match of the year candidate. And it was on pace to be one of the best matches of the year on Raw, no doubt. But to have it end in a disqualification, it just really irritates me. And I understand what they're doing. You know, they're trying to put over, why am I blanking on? Not Ty Dillinger. Drew McIntyre with Dolph Ziggler. And to make it more of a rival there, even a handicap match potential with Seth Rollins, that needed to have a clean finish. Whether you put the belt back on Seth or whether you just have Dolph win clean, it just takes away the whole traditional aspect of it. You send him back into the dressing room area during the match there, and then, of course, you have Roman Reigns come out at the end. I think the whole plan there was to get Roman over a little bit, just a little bit, to help out his boy Seth. But again, they had a real opportunity to make that match of the year candidate, and they threw it away. And that is what the problem has been on Monday Night Raw. A chance to capitalize, and nothing. But they did make a statement there with Dolph winning the Intercontinental title against Seth. Still very excited to see where this rival goes. I think it's going to carry all the way to SummerSlam, definitely. And these are two top performers there for the IC title. So that's where I did not like the finish there on Raw, but the rival here is going to be good for the next couple of months.
So I appreciate the take. I appreciate a strong take like that. Dolph and Seth are going to have amazing. They're going to have amazing matches. They need a story to get more fans invested in it.
Right.
And we're living right now in an era where you can't have a clean finish every week. You just can't.
Yeah.
I will tell you one positive about the main event last night, and I will read from Meltzer in his daily update today. Quote, the lesson of the show was that, at least for this week, the idea of a nearly 30-minute main event was a huge rating success, unquote. So the ratings for Raw Hour 1 to 2 were about the same, and then Hour 3 it spiked up with the build, get this, for something with stakes. And this goes to your Brock Lesnar point, is that people were invested in Seth Rollins trying to regain the Intercontinental Championship.
Mm-hmm.
So now WWE is looking to build a story between Dolph and Seth, and
right.
this is going to be part of the story. So my question to you is, Mike, if you have to have a finish, which you feel strongly that they had to have a finish,
yes.
what's your finish to that match?
I would even have Dolph retain. I have no problem with him retaining on that clean. Even if he does have his own DQ of somehow bringing a chair and hit Seth, that's fine. I have no problem with that. But to have someone else come back in from the outside that was not there, that's where I have a problem. That needed to finish between the two of them right there, and that would be it. Now, I fully admit, that's me being invested as a fan, putting aside my, you know, analysis here and everything. I was really into that match, and I really wanted to see a good finish there between one of the two. Dolph would retain, though, if it were my choice.
So there are really only two finishes to last night. One is you have Seth regain the Intercontinental Championship, or the other, and this is what I would have done, is you have Dolph cheat again to win, and that's hooking the tights again, or you know, a thumb to the eye, as simple as that is, or a low blow behind the referee's back.
But or the old brass knuckles.
It's a personal preference of mine to have wrestlers build momentum in some way, so
I don't
want to flip the championship back to Seth Rollins.
Right.
At least right now, but I think longer term, I get the vibe that they might be positioning Seth Rollins for a match with Brock at SummerSlam.
Wow.
That's just a vibe. That's not an I believe. Celtics fans know what that term means with me. That is just a feeling that they're either positioning Seth to have another great match with Dolph and regain the championship at Extreme Rules, or they're going to have Seth move out of that and into the Universal Championship program, which, as we've said for a few weeks now, Seth has been the number one guy on Monday Night Raw, especially since The Miz has departed.
Right.
So if you put Seth in a situation where he's in the main event against Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, that's going to be a match that fans are going to be more accepting to in Brooklyn, whenever SummerSlam is, sometime in August, August 20th,
August
something
18th,
like that.
I think. Yeah. By the way, Jimmy, do you have a picture handy of the Universal title? I forget what it looks like.
I do. I actually have a replica that I will take off my wall and show you.
Oh, you do? Oh, okay.
No, that's actually not true. But if anybody wants to send me a free one, I'm more than happy to promote your Twitter for a free Universal Championship replica. I like the deluxe ones. Those are $2,000, you know. I'll give you a retweet if you want to buy me one.
Well, again, I forgot what it looks like because we have not seen the champion on TV since, the night after WrestleMania? Is that what it is now at this point? Or even the week after?
So where was this outrage for Okada?
I mean, he
went 700 and whatever days and only defended the thing 13 times. Where was your outrage there?
Yeah, that's pretty bad that you have to defend it every pay-per-view or every main event that you do have there within the company or whatever's happening.
Do you realize, Mike, by the way, that Brock Lesnar's wrestled however many times it's been in the last, I don't know, since what he came back really full bore the night after 28, that we have seen him fight Goldberg and win the Universal Championship. We saw him fight Roman and retain, and we also saw him at the TD Garden retain against Strowman and Kane. So we've seen three out of his, three matches of his, 10, 11, 12 Universal Championship matches?
Yeah, and he did, he did beat John Cena. Remember, he beat the crap out of him.
We weren't there for that. My point is that we've seen probably more matches of his live than most of the WWE universe.
I'll give you that. Yeah, the live situation. I'm just thinking of other ones. But yes, we've been very fortunate here in Boston because that's one of the WWE home bases, as we know.
Mike, I've gone kind of back and forth with what I want to do with my lead story, my lead takeaway from the week, and I go back and forth whether it's Big Cass getting fired or whether it's the passing of Leon White, who wrestling fans know as Vader.
Right.
I lean towards Vader. On June 18th at about 7 p.m., Leon White passed away. His son took to Twitter, to his dad's Twitter account, to make the announcement. And for me, Vader is one of the top 5 to 10 big men in the history of pro wrestling. If you were to ask me in no particular order, the great big men in history are Undertaker, Andre, Big Show, Vader, Kane, Yokozuna, Bam Bam Bigelow, Gorilla Monsoon, Bruiser Brody, and the Big Boss Man. I'm probably angering people and leaving out a few people, but those are my personal top 10, and you can order them however you see fit. I first saw Vader back in 1990, and I was relatively new to WCW. I had started watching them earlier that year. There was a Clash of Champions Tuesday. It wasn't Tuesday in Texas, but it had Texas Shootout or something like that. It's the night that I fell in love with Cactus Jack because he took this stupid dive off the apron against Mil Máscaras, and I was like, oh, wow, that guy's crazy. So what WCW did was they hyped Vader over a bunch of video packages from his matches in Japan for this appearance. He came in at the Great American Bash in 1990, and he dominated Tom Zink. But when I first saw him, he had this big match feel to him. And it was something unique. It was something a little bit different, and especially at such a young age and being new to WCW, which was a Ric Flair, Sting, Lex Luger, that type of territory. In WCW, his best matches and feuds were with Sting and Ric Flair and with Cactus Jack. For me, one of my favorite moments in history of WCW actually is Ric Flair winning the WCW championship against Vader in December of 1993 at Starrcade in Charlotte, North Carolina. Emotion, the crowd, the storytelling, that match really had everything. And it was kind of an accident that match got put together. Long story, won't digress into it. But eventually Vader made his way into the WWF. And his run was strange. He should have been WWF champion, but he made too many enemies for his ring style, his smelly tights, whatever it was. People just seemed to find reasons to dislike Vader. And for me, I felt like he should have won the WWF championship at SummerSlam 96 against Shawn Michaels.
Right.
But that didn't happen. Meltzer in 1996 wrote a number of times about Vader winning the title at Survivor Series and then dropping it back to Shawn at the Royal Rumble in San Antonio, Texas. That, of course, that went to Vader. Our friends Bruce and Conrad did an entire Vader episode, which is available in their archives over at somethingtowrestlewith.com. And if you buy a T-shirt from them, Bruce will give you a call to thank you. They'll have an announcement relating to Boston this Friday.
Mm-hmm. Big tease. Big tease.
One of the things that Bruce and Conrad do is they talk in great detail about the four-star match that they had at SummerSlam 96, Vader and Shawn. They note that that SummerSlam match really changed the entire direction for Vader getting the championship and really his WWF run going forward. And the title switch went from Vader beating Shawn at Madison Square Garden to Sid beating Michaels at Madison Square Garden. And really, at the point that he didn't win the championship at SummerSlam 96, Vader was done in WWF for all intent and purpose.
More or less.
And that's kind of a shame because Vader, to me, is the perfect Vince McMahon. Look at that big bastard. Like, he had the size and he had Cornette talking for him. He just had everything that he should have been WWF champion. And he never got there. He was supposed to get a run with the Intercontinental Championship and didn't. But to me, like, the passing of Vader, Leon White, is just a big story because he's a top 10 big man in the history of pro wrestling. And he's 400 pounds and he's doing moonsaults.
450.
Like, 450. innovative style. And to me, that's a loss. That's a big loss to the wrestling world.
It's a huge loss, Jimmy. And 450 pounds, that's what Vader weighed. And, you know, another thing, too, he played in the NFL for the LA Rams. Actually played in a Super Bowl when the Rams lost to the Pittsburgh Steelers back in, I want to say, 78, 79. But, you know, the size of him, as we said, and even to go up on the turnbuckle and do a backflip with that size, the athleticism, you're right, after that SummerSlam loss in 96, he got his big push there. It just didn't really seem like he was ever going to be main event status again. I know they had him team up with Mankind when he, you know, went there with Paul Bearer, one of those two guys that were a tag team more or less. And then they had him a lot of six-man tags, and it just was not the same. I have always been a WWE, WWF fan. I did not really get to see him in the WCW or appreciate him there for what he was able to accomplish. So the way I saw Vader was in the WWF, late 90s. One moment I'll always remember because he was my favorite broadcaster was Gorilla Monsoon when he was the interim president. He attacked Gorilla and did the Vader bomb on him, and that made me hate Vader. I was like, are you kidding me? So
that
really
that was quite the
off.
Impactful way for Vader to make his really his early debut in the WWF.
Yep.
Took out Gorilla Monsoon, another big man who was the president of the WWF at the time, Hall mm-hmm. of Famer, like really, really yep. big impact, and they brought him in a big way.
You know, another guy throw in that list, I don't know if you did mention the Big Show, right? You put him in?
Oh, yeah, he's in there.
And one more, Kevin Nash.
Kevin Nash, yeah.
I'd throw him in there, too. But Vader, definitely, we lost a giant in the industry here. Last year, I'll tell you a quick story, some at WrestleCon in Orlando. 2017, I posted the picture on the at WrestleCast985 Twitter page last week. And, you know, knowing his story with the heart condition and he didn't have a lot of time left, I remember walking around with the Wong father and he said, let's pick a couple guys that we should really support. And, you know, I knew the backstory there on Vader. And I even think he had, you know, some medical bills to pay and all that. I'm like, let's go meet Vader. And, you know, Andy being a generous guy as he is, I think he bought like two or three autographs just to say, let's go support him. And we did. We got a picture with him and had a nice chat with him for a couple of minutes. Quiet guy, but overall very nice. Took the time to chat. And 63 years young, definitely left an impact in the professional wrestling world. And he should be in the Hall of Fame, Jimmy. He really should.
Yeah, and I think he'll get there. I think he'll get there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to happen posthumously now.
Yeah, absolutely. So from one big man who has passed and is one of the great big mans in the history of wrestling to a big man who got fired, Big Cass got fired. I talked to somebody who confirmed the report that I'm about to read about how and why Big Cass was fired.
Okay.
The original report came from something called at Wrestling News Co. on Twitter. Quote, the last straw for Big Cass in WWE was an incident in which he grabbed Carmelo's arm. The Usos and Eric Rowan reportedly had to stop him. So,
wow.
I had somebody who confirmed this to me. And from what I've heard, Cass and Carmella are no longer an item.
Yeah.
They were engaged. Now they're not. They co-own a house together, but he doesn't live there, which I kind of don't understand, but that's their situation, and that's not my issue. Meltzer wrote a number of paragraphs about it in the Wrestling Observer newsletter. I won't go into details, but what I will tell you is for Vince McMahon to personally fire a wrestler who is 7 feet tall and looks like Cass does, the list of things he did wrong must be lengthy.
Oh, yeah.
And in fairness, I have to read you Robbie Fox of Barstool. He used to be part of the Outside the Ropes. No, not Outside the Ropes. The From the Top
From
Rope,
the top rope. Yeah.
Podcast with Jerry Karabas. Shout out Karabas. Section 10
good.
In the building, down in the DMs. He wrote on Twitter Saturday night, he being Robbie Fox, pronouns pal, quote, I've been pretty silent about Big Cass' release from the WWE because he's a good friend of mine, and it's just an unfortunate situation all around that I felt really bad about. But this report that it's because of an altercation with Carmella is complete and utter BS. He actually used the cuss words. We can't. We're broadcast radio. He continues, there was never an altercation with Carmella or Vic Joseph, who is the 205 Live announcer. He filled in on NXT recently.
right.
or the Usos or anyone. And it sucks to see Cass getting dragged through the mud because of a report from one of the most notoriously inaccurate journalists, and journalists is in quotes, in the modern pro wrestling history. It's disappointing that none of these names involved in the report have come forward to dispel the rumor, like I figured they would. But hey, I guess if it doesn't make them look good, it's not worth it, right? Unquote. So I'm not sure who's right or wrong, but what I do know is I go back to Vince McMahon personally fired a wrestler who is 7 feet tall.
Yep.
So there is some incident there, and hopefully we'll find out what it is.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Meltzer had like 10 paragraphs on his history of issues and doing this and not doing this and doing this and then the Carmella thing. And I mean, even if half of that list is right,
yeah,
that's still a lot for Vince to give up on somebody who's 7 feet tall and looks like Cass does.
And Jimmy, it was the day after a pay-per-view when he went up against Daniel Bryan, right? He fought Daniel Bryan.
And Daniel Bryan beat him via tap out, which for Daniel Bryan at his size, to beat Big Cass at his size, two straight pay-per-views via tap out. I believe the first one was a tap out. If I'm not, somebody will correct me because they're yelling at the computer. Huh. But for Daniel Bryan to go over twice on Big Cass, this is something that was in the works. So whatever happened that Tuesday night was either that was just the day that they decided to do it or something else big happened.
Yes, it was a tap out. I'm looking at that at Backlash. So, yes, something big happened. You know what, Jimmy? You got this in my head about a month ago when Daniel Bryan returned and you were like, why is he fighting Daniel Bryan? And when I found out that he was released by the WWE, my initial thought was he did something wrong in that match to get him fired before all this stuff came out because you got it in my head. Congratulations there, James Stewart. However, I got to go with the Carmella thing. I'm going to go on that side of the story. Something happened there. She is being the person, or she is the clear champion right now. The money is on her. She's more valuable than Big Cass. And I'm not saying that she did. I'm not saying I heard this. My gut says that someone close to Carmella or her went right to the top and said, get him out of here. I can't deal with this. Or I'm out. And she's more valuable than Big Cass. I think that a lot of that stemmed from it. And I think he probably had that physical whatever interaction there. And that was the beginning of the end. So to have Vince, you're right, to personally step in, that literally takes, you know what, the size of grapefruit.
Because that's how it was described to me, is that Vince personally fired Big Cass.
Yeah.
That's how it was stated to me. And that just that blows my mind.
Yeah, and typically it is the head of talent relations to do that, right?
I would think so, yes.
Or HR. But to have Vince McMahon, the boss, to do that, that's a problem. So, you know, Big Cass, I think the best bet for him right now, Jimmy, hook up with his old buddy Enzo and try to run the independent circuit there, see what they can do, you know, on that run there. But definitely, that's a major red flag, and he is not going to be making his way back to WWE. Maybe not this lifetime, and definitely not his second one.
Well, they never say never with the WWE.
Well, if Carmella's there, he ain't going to be there.
Well, maybe they bring Big Cass back, and he ends up on Raw.
You could do that.
I just go to the profile of the Vince McMahon wrestler.
That's a big man,
and that's a big. It's a big man territory.
And that's what he's wanted for such a long time, and that was what the shock value was sent there throughout the universe on that.
One thing that I found interesting as we transition to another story is Daniel Bryan was announced for a WWE show in Australia, and the date of the show is October.
Really?
As far as my knowledge goes, Daniel Bryan's contract ends September 1st.
Okay.
And we've discussed in the past about him potentially showing up at midnight Eastern, 11 o'clock Chicago time, and being all in.
Oh, yeah.
So Meltzer writes in The Observer, quote, being announced is not a sign that he, Brian, has signed a new contract, as he is not. It is certainly possible, perhaps even likely, that he will. He also could go independent and do appearances with the company on shows like this, similar to what Rey Mysterio Jr. has done so far this year. The difference between he and Lesnar is that Lesnar would be extremely unhappy about being announced for that for a date that he's not agreed to, and it would be giving him a lot of leverage at that point. With Bryan, it's not going to be the situation. So the insinuation is that Brock Lesnar was not announced for this show and Daniel Bryan was.
Mm-hmm.
And this leads me to think that they must be close on a new contract.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know that, but, you know, Meltzer's kind of freestyling a little bit with the fact that he's announced for a show, but he doesn't have a contract for it and how it's different from Brock. But that's kind of a big stride to just go announcing somebody who you haven't talked to. I mean, I guess they've done that with Brock for SummerSlam, and now they're kind of playing it into the Raw storyline. Of, well, we're going to do this multi-person match for a chance at Brock, but now we're not sure Brock has the date. And I think the date to still wait for as far as Brock goes is the end of this month to see if he files for reinstatement to UFC. But I think the interesting story here is, if I read into this, is that Bryan doesn't seem to be going anywhere from WWE.
No. Not at all.
Which I hope he gets paid, and I hope he gets the proper push.
Yeah, and he will. I think, you know, Jimmy, I even said it too, that he would totally be championed by the end of the year. And I really still will stand by that. It's a feel-good story here. Former SmackDown GM, you know, beating the odds and everything. The fact that they are promoting him there for Australia and, you know, putting him in these matches now, getting some good time in the ring, he is here for the long run. There is no doubt in my mind. And good for Daniel Bryan. This is what he wanted. You know, he got that clearance there earlier this year, so it's a feel-good story all around. He deserves it, and he's one of the most likable guys, I'd say, in the last 10 years, like, by the fans. I don't think he's hated by anybody. He's the ultimate babyface, Jimmy. Really is.
100%. I love Daniel Bryan. I've been a fan of his for a long time, his Ring of Honor days. I watched him work, you know, a 90-minute match at a Greyhound Park in Revere one time and all this stuff. So I love Daniel Bryan. It feels like he's working on a longer-term deal with WWF, and if the money's right and the push is right, good for him. And I hope that we get to see Daniel Bryan versus AJ Styles at SummerSlam. That's my hope.
That'd be awesome.
I think it would be a great match, and I think they both want to do it. And I'd also like to see Daniel Bryan versus Nakamura at some point where they have a longer forum and a longer match time to tell a good story that I think that they can pull.
Yep. I think that'd be a really good one. And, you know, Nakamura, like I said last week there, when he did not able to capture the championship there, they're obviously pushing him to the U.S. title there, and that will definitely get him back up in that stage here. I'd love to see that, him and Daniel Bryan down the line.
Weird story with Nakamura. He actually got pulled from SmackDown tonight.
Yeah, what's that
US
about?
U.S. Championship match against Jeff Hardy because he got bit by a security dog.
Oh, gosh. That's
Which
bizarre.
I don't know if that's true, but that's a hell of a way to get somebody out of a match.
Seriously.
Because they promoted it all weekend, and then they pulled it a few hours beforehand.
Right, and they have to add that U.S. Open Challenge or U.S. title open
which by the way, thrilled to see Eric Young wrestle a singles match on SmackDown. Thrilled. Eric Young is one of my favorite performers. He's excellent. He's a little bat bleep crazy too.
He deserves it. Good push for him.
Kind of my final story here is the Ring of Honor Madison Square Garden situation. Ring of Honor, they're the owner of Sinclair Broadcasting, who owns Ring of Honor, put it out there in a media appearance that he was looking to book Madison Square Garden WrestleMania weekend. And there was some controversy as to whether they had a signed agreement or if it was just they had a verbal agreement or whatever. But here's, we exchanged some messages with some people, we being Mike and I, And here's kind of the summation of our text exchange with this individual. Ripley threw out there to see what the reaction would be, referring to him throwing out the date and the appearance of Madison Square Garden. Vince took the bait. But these idiots writing that Sinclair owns all these Fox stations and will preempt SmackDown, it doesn't work that way. Local affiliates can preempt prime time maybe 2 to 3 times a year. For example, a local station might use one of them to air a Patriots football game. Stations will do it for a telethon or a one-time special, and almost always when the networks are in repeats. So if Sinclair banished SmackDown, it would be violating an affiliate agreement and cost itself a lot of local ad dollars. Of course, the latter part of that is referring to SmackDown being on Fox starting October 2019, which everybody seems to have made official today.
Yeah.
But what it essentially goes back to is the people at Sinclair threw out this idea that they were going to run Madison Square Garden WrestleMania weekend, and Vince apparently made a phone call and said, they're not running Madison Square Garden, that's our building.
Wow. Well, first of all, Jimmy, the only real shows that WWE has in Madison Square Garden anymore are just house shows.
That is true, because that building cost a lot of money to run.
Because they have a very strong union. And the deal is, with that union there for Madison Square Garden, you got to pay those guys to, you're right, it does cost a lot of money to run. And yeah, you got to pay them top dollar to set up the stuff, where WWE has their own guys come in and that's it. But they have some sort of deal, MSG, and that's a major part of it. That's crazy to show the power Vince on one particular arena. And, you know, I was thinking about that the other day, too. For WrestleMania weekend next year, WrestleMania 35 in New York, they don't have Madison Square Garden booked.
They do not. They are using the Barclays Center in Brooklyn.
Right. And they're using that the whole weekend there. So I was just thinking about that. Like, is this just going to be for house shows now? I mean, I'm sure there will be a pay-per-view there again at some point.
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, like, I'd love, they have a house show coming up here in July on a Friday night. I'd love to go to that thing, because I've never been in Madison Square Garden. It's a bucket list item.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a really cool arena.
And but I'd love to go to a house show there sometime and see, like, remember last summer they did a house show and they switched the U.S. title.
Right. Exactly. So it's been there, no secret, it's been the home base for the company for a long time. And that's a very interesting story there, to hear that report that Vince called them and said, do not put it there at WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, and I don't know if WWE counteracts and says, okay, well, we will run the Hall of Fame there instead.
Yeah,
or if they do something to compensate Madison Square Garden for losing out on that money.
Right, right. And just quite an opportunity.
It's kind of gutsy, too, for Sinclair Broadcasting to not only kind of throw out that idea, but potentially invest that kind of money into that kind of a show. And Madison Square Garden probably holds 14,000 for wrestling.
That sounds right.
So they're taking a gamble, because in New Orleans, the building, the Lakefront Center, holds about 6,000, and that's their largest crowd in history. So for New York, they would have to double that. And I'm not sure what they could do for a main event that would sell out Madison Square Garden and get 12,000 in there.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's maybe it was MSG, pulling a threat to say, we want you back here for TV. We want you back here for a pay-per-view or something instead of a house show. We want your money. But, it costs so much money there. Do you know the last time a televised event for WWE took place at MSG? Do you know what it was? I just looked this up.
I don't know.
WrestleMania 29 weekend Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that would make sense. That would probably make sense, yeah.
Bruno, I almost went to that. Oh, you did?
I almost went to that. That was going to be my Madison Square Garden appearance, and I just didn't make it. Something came up.
Wow. Okay. Well, that was Bruno,
Bob Backlund, Mick Foley were the headliners. Yep.
Yep. Exactly. So that was the last time. That's 5 years ago. Crazy. So
well, and I shouldn't say that they couldn't get to 12,000 or 13,000 because the Young Bucks just sold out. Young Bucks and Cody just sold out all in with 10,000 people. So New York's a bigger population, so it might be easier to do it. But I just like I'm thinking like what could they do for a match? I mean, you'd have to put Okada on there. You'd have to load it up, and they could. But this is another bigger picture point is what's next year's WrestleMania main event?
Well, by you're saying it, you've been saying it since WrestleMania
Charlotte
30.
Versus Ronda.
Yep, you've been saying that since the night of WrestleMania 34, the night of after the event.
Well, you know, sometimes you're blessed to be talking to the right person at the right time and
sure.
Suggesting things and.
Hey, Jimmy, I got to just stand corrected on one quick item.
Sure.
On MSG. I just looked this up. If you want to count Brock Lesnar's Go to Hell tour, remember that there in 2015? This was exclusively broadcast on the WWE Network. It was October 3rd at Madison Square Garden. It was Brock Lesnar versus Big Show. So that was only on the network, but not a Raw, SmackDown, or a pay-per-view. That was the last one right there for a televised physical confrontation right there.
Can I chime in with some breaking news here?
Go ahead.
And this is only because it relates to us and our relationship with certain people. And if you look at your phone, you'll get the same text message. This story comes from itemlive.com. Kowloon files a permit for an outdoor eating area.
I saw that.
So the person in our text message, who I won't out, says, quote, only a matter of time before there's an indie show in the parking lot, unquote.
Yeah, that's probably going to happen at some point.
Which would be awesome.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. And never, ever count anything out on that one, trust me.
And I mean, you know, the Kowloon might be hosting something, say, around October that, you know, well, you know.
Wink, wink.
You know. You'll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll know sooner than later.
Yeah.
You know what, Jimmy? We'll probably know before the next Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast.
I would say noontime on Friday. Mike, any closing thoughts?
You know, I thought the whole card is starting to take shape here now for Extreme Rules. Monday Night Raw, Go Home Show for Extreme Rules is at the TD Garden on July 9th. And then SmackDown July 10th at the Manchester, New Hampshire. So it always has been that little bridge show on the way.
Of course, Fenway Park is hosting WWE Night.
Yep.
That week as well. Kofi Kingston, Boston College grad, throwing out the first pitch.
Yep. And, you know, it's. I believe
he's going to be a guest of the Unsanctioned podcast. Former friend of mine. And I can't think of his name, but check out the Unsanctioned podcast on. I'll retweet it later, but it's going to have Kofi Kingston on it.
Nice plug. And
hey, us wrestling fans. I was saying this to the New Age Insiders, right? Us wrestling podcasts, we got to stick together. We got to help each other out.
Yeah. That's it. That's all about. That's how we do it, you know, and especially people that you know and trust, right?
Well, I don't know that I trust anybody, but I know a lot of people, so.
All right, you don't trust me. That's fair.
Oh, no, you're a remote theft.
That was such a layup. Yeah, there you go. Looking forward to Extreme Rules a couple of weeks away. And finally, Jimmy, finally, although I think this ship may have sailed Bayley and Sasha Banks, finally going to feud here. But holy cow, they waited way too long in this one. That's only a matter of time before we get the full announcement between those two at SummerSlam. So get ready for that, too.
Oh, Angry Bayley was tremendous on Monday. She struck down with furious anger and vengeance. It was tremendous. It was a great beatdown.
We needed that.
The best part about it was I think they were trying to portray her as the villain in the situation, and the crowd just cheered.
Yep, and that's what it's all about. So get ready for a good feud there at SummerSlam, but hopefully the ship did not sail 100%.
For Mike Riley at Sarge985, you can follow me on Twitter at IamJamesStewart. Leaving you, and of course the show. Go ahead.
Yep, at WrestleCast985.
And of course, I have to leave you with a tip from a former Minnesota governor: win if you can, lose if you must, but always cheat. And Bobby Heenan would add, and never get caught.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.